Welcome to Current Sports. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. We're going to remind you all that you can weigh in, let your voice be heard each and every weekday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on WKAR AM 870. Follow me on Twitter at Al Martin WKAR. Like Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports or even email me at almartin@wkar.org. Don't be shy. Hit us up. We always want to hear what's on your mind. And of course, you know, you can give us a ring right here at the Current Sports Studio. Call 517-355-9527. And how have you been enjoying the show so far? I encourage all of the dedicated Current Sports listeners out there to give us a buzz and let us know what you like, what you don't like, and post some conversations that you would like to hear discussed right here on the show. Again, tweet me, Facebook me, email me, send me a smoke signal, give us a call here, anything. Let us know how you're enjoying things so far here at Current Sports. Okay, well, today is a big day for the MSU football team, to say the least, because it's decision day. The MSU football team, Mark D'Antonio, he addressed the media today in his in a press conference held at 11:30 this morning, which Current Sports attended, and he let us know who will be behind center. So right now we're going to start the show at the top of the hour to talk about that right now, and I'm joined by production assistant Matt Lutke as we discuss this whole quarterback fiasco right now, I tell you. And I'm gonna let you know right now, ladies and gents, it's probably already out there, you probably read it already, but Mark D'Antonio has decided to name Andrew Maxwell as the starter for Friday's game, for at least for Friday's game, right? So what's your thoughts on that, Matt?
I mean, is it any surprise, really?
Not at all.
Anybody else, it would have, you know, maybe created some it would have ruffled some feathers, just because he's the guy who, you know, started all those games last year. He's the fifth-year senior. Anybody else, it would have really rocked the boat in terms of the direction of the team. Now, we kind of knew this was coming. He's going to get at least a shot, and he should. I mean, he's right. Paid his dues. He'll get one shot, and, you know that the leash is going to be much shorter than it was last year. So I think really, you know, him starting the first game, not a big surprise, but it'll be more interesting to see where we go once we get to the Notre Dame game.
Right.
Once we start getting into the Big Ten season, is he still going to be the starter?
Exactly.
That's the real question.
That's the real question here. And it was interesting because, of course, the question was brought up to Coach D'Antonio today, whether or not, some of the other quarterbacks will see some playing time on Friday. And he let us know that Connor Cook will see playing time. Of course, Damian Terry, who had that unbelievable scrimmage, 240 yards, three touchdowns, rushed for 40 yards, 280 yards, total offensive yards, excuse me. I mean, he was unbelievable. So, of course, I mean, even though he's a freshman, you got to look at Damian Terry and say that those numbers definitely stand out. And D'Antonio was asked whether or not Damian Terry would possibly see any playing time, and he said, quote, the learning curve for Damian Terry is pretty high. Now, it depends on how he practices, depends on how everyone else plays, end quote. So it all depends on practice. And like you said, Coach D'Antonio, when he came out and said that Andrew Maxwell was the starter, D'Antonio doesn't really, like you said, rock the boat. He doesn't rock the boat. Nothing really is going to stand out and say, oh my goodness, I can't believe D'Antonio just made that move. You know what I mean? This is real cliche.
Unless it's a fake field goal.
Right. Oh yeah, exactly.
Like he saves it for the field.
He saves it for the field. He saves it for the on field action. Yeah. But, it really didn't surprise me. The question is, I don't know how Maxwell is going to play this year. The season hasn't started. But if he does start having some problems, I really think that, Connor Cook, Damian Terry, one of those individuals should be, let in and allowed to see what they can do.
Absolutely. And, how many unsuccessful drives or bad throws, missed a throw, drop passes, how many, mistakes are going to be made before the crowd starts to really, the eye rolls become audible, the groans from the crowd. I mean, I think he's got probably a longer leash with the coaching staff than he does with the fan base, just because last year was so frustrating. It'll be interesting to see, if he comes out like gangbusters and just, lights up Western Michigan. Do we forget last season? And does everybody jump back on the Maxwell bandwagon?
And that's the thing we got to realize, too. They're playing Western Michigan. So even if Maxwell does come out and, he looks superb, which is a great sign. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's still Western Michigan. And then I think if Maxwell does come out and really have a great game, hey, why not? Stick him in there. You got to play the best guy. That's right. what it comes down to. So, Alex, you are also at that press conference. Alex Shard joins us also here on Current Sports, our production assistant. Alex accompanied me to that presser. What did you think of D'Antonio's move to announce Maxwell as a starter and that press conference in general?
Yeah, pretty much what you have been saying so far is pretty dead on. But the one thing that I think D'Antonio could have elaborated more on was the other three quarterbacks that are on the bench. He did not mention once if how he would spread them out. He just said, we're going to try to win. We're going to try to, forward our football team down the field. That's the task. So if Maxwell can't do that, maybe he'll look to other options. But he never specifically said, oh, the first person after Maxwell is going to be Connor Cook. The first person is going to be Terry. He didn't even answer a question if Terry would be even redshirting. And to me, that is a bigger concern, because if Terry is as talented as we say he is, and he also said Terry's learning curve is very, very high, then we may have a huge predicament of transferring on our hands.
You think so?
Really?
I think it's not a problem.
Who do you see transferring?
Yeah.
I don't want to go into that, because...
Well, I mean, that's really
far-fetched. Opinion-wise, if anyone is transferring, it has to be one of the freshmen, either O'Connor or Terry, because... Right. If Connor Cook and Maxwell both get the majority of playing time this year, and you're Tyler O'Connor and you're Damian Terry, and Tyler has redshirted already,
right?
Then how can you see yours? Well, I don't know, actually.
But there's a couple of different scenarios in this too, because I think just imagine if Damian Terry, and I brought up this too, if Damian Terry was to start. And then you look at the positions of a Connor Cook and a Tyler O'Connor. I mean, they're sitting back like, okay, this freshman just came in and sweeped everyone off their feet, and he has the job now.
Right.
Their future's a shot.
Let me rephrase that. The person who would transfer would be Connor Cook, if anyone.
There it is.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
You agree?
I do. If Terry wins the job, yeah. But I
O'Connor, either of them.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know if Terry's really going to see the field that much this season. I think he's probably going to redshirt, just because, I mean, even the stud quarterbacks coming out of high school struggle their freshman year.
Braxton Miller, who was
player of the year last year,
right?
He was average as a freshman.
Right. And I'll tell you what, when you look at it, and I keep going back to the scrimmage, when you look at Damian Terry, if he was to start, I mean, and he's playing, very well and outplaying everyone else, throw him in there. You got to play the best player, but you also have to realize that this is a freshman. You have to – those growing pains, you just got to get through them. You know what I mean? He's not going to – every freshman makes their mistakes, unless you're Johnny Football. And that was just – Johnny Football special. You know what I mean? There's not too many Johnny Manziels out there. But if Damian Terry does go out there and you decide to put him as your starter, and he is clearly – if he is – proves to be the clear, cut favorite out of this whole QB race, and you throw him out there as a freshman, you got to expect some letdown sometime. You can't – the expectations can't be too high because he is a freshman. So
right, but I guess at the same time, I feel like as a fan base, for sure, people would probably accept it if he does make a few mistakes. They would accept the growing pains, because at the same time, you have a guy who is this talented, who is capable of making plays. And last year, they had plenty of mistakes, but they didn't really have a lot of big plays.
Right.
But if you have a guy who can make something happen, I think you take your lumps and you grow with it. When you have a defense like we do, it's kind of, you can handle a few mistakes on offense because you have guys on the other side of the ball that can kind of cover up some of those mistakes.
Yeah, that defense definitely is a catch-22, I like to call them.
It's the safety net.
Right, it's definitely the safety net, And I tell you what, when you look at D'Antonio and Maxwell, well, I want to ask you guys first, just off your initial gut reaction. I know we haven't played a game yet. MSU has not hit the field yet. They hit the field Friday. Just on your gut reaction to this thing. Do you think that Andrew Maxwell, just making a prediction out there, do you think that Andrew Maxwell will be the quarterback for the entire season?
Oh, man.
Gut reaction. What's your gut telling you?
I'm haunted by last season, so I'm going to say no.
You don't think he is? Who do you think is?
Oh, gosh.
I know.
O'Connor.
O'Connor. You think Tyler O'Connor will be the QB for MSU season this season, eventually?
If we're going to shake things up, and if it's not Maxwell, I think...
It has to be a freshman.
I think it's going to be O'Connor.
What about you, Alex?
Yeah, I think if we shake it up, I don't think it's Cook. I think it's a freshman. I think it's someone who's more mobile than Maxwell.
Do you think Maxwell's going to be the quarterback for the rest of the season?
I'm going to say that he will. And I think the reason is because he has the year, and D'Antonio is sticking his neck out for Maxwell. He is sticking his neck out to say, I'm confident that after 13 games, the quarterback will be much better this year. So I don't think Maxwell will let him down. So, yes, he will be the quarterback.
You think he's going to be the quarterback.
Will.
Gotcha.
And it's not just him who has to improve. The entire offense was
the
awful
entire.
Last season.
I mean, and that's the thing when you look at it, too. I mean, you can't put the entire heap of the offensive problems for the MSU football team on the shoulders of Andrew Maxwell. I mean, there were 66 drop passes last season. That's inexcusable. That receiver core has to step up and you know, put some pressure off that QB. You know what I mean? I mean, just think looking at all the close games that MSU lost last season, I mean, those 66 passes, I mean, you catch half of those, possibly you got a lot of more wins in that win column, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and it's not even just catching the ball. They were terrible at blocking.
Right.
Do you remember two years ago, they could throw a screen pass to B.J. Cunningham or Keyshawn Martin, and Keith Nichol would absolutely blow somebody up.
Right.
That's an easy 8 yards.
Easy.
Last year, I feel like we tried to do that to Mumphrey, and somebody would miss a block, a force fumble, and, you know, it's the other team's ball. It was just like things that were so easy 2 years ago were absolutely a chore last season. And I think if everybody kind of improves their game, if the offensive line stays healthy, which knock on wood because that hasn't happened ever, it feels like, it won't be as big of a task for Andrew Maxwell as it was last season.
Very, very, very true. I totally agree with you. So for me, just based on my gut reaction, I don't think Andrew Maxwell will be.
Do we have some Jeopardy music for this one?
Yeah, I know,
it's
right? Yeah, it's a tough one. I don't think that Andrew Maxwell is going to be the quarterback for the entire season for the MSU football team. I think I could see somebody like, because I mean, right now, if you listen to this press conference, and you look at D'Antonio's demeanor and the way he answered the question and how he brought up Connor Cook. Connor Cook is that second guy right now. I guess Connor Cook has definitely been showing some things in practice. Connor Cook, all you MSU fans out there, again, you will see Connor Cook play on Friday. D'Antonio said it. Connor Cook will be out there. So he's that number two guy. Just on that alone, I could see possibly Connor Cook being that guy. And then looking at last season in the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl and seeing him lead, you know, the team to victory on that last drive. I haven't seen much of Connor Cook other than that drive. But just from the demeanor and way, and just the way D'Antonio answered questions and brought up Connor Cook, I can see Connor Cook possibly being that guy. I would like now, in a fantasy world, I would love to see Damian Terry out there. I want to see 240 yards, 3 touchdowns. I want to see how good this kid is because there's been a lot of reviews on him out there that are saying that he's the real deal. So I don't know, though. It's one scrimmage. I keep talking about one scrimmage. I keep beating the dead horse. So. You know, it'll be definitely interesting. And also, want to let you guys know out there that Current Sports will be live. We're teaming up with Current State, guys, live at the game an hour beforehand. And we'll be doing, some live tags 3 hours before, that one kicks off. 8 p.m. against Western Michigan University. Current Sports will be on campus teaming up with Current State. Myself and Mark Bayshore will certainly be hitting the airwaves. That should be a fun time. And also high school football kicks off Thursday. Wow, 2 days away now. Can't believe that. High school football in Michigan is certainly a fantastic time. Current Sports will also be at those games and bringing you coverage of that. So should be a fun time, guys. So, when you look at the MSU football team, though, it's going to be an interesting year. And I think this is really a make-or-break year as far as a fan perspective goes. Because let's be honest here. I mean, fans, MSU football fans are tired of not getting to the Rose Bowl. The Rose Bowl is the goal.
Right.
And, you know, if it's coming so short, if you look at the whole, when Kirk Cousins, you know, with the 11-win season there, and a lot of us, you know, we fell short of that going to the Rose Bowl. It's like, it's really frustrating. I think it's bowl or bust now. Rose Bowl or bust for this MSU team.
It's a lot of pressure.
It is a lot of pressure.
As if there wasn't enough pressure.
I think it is,
on
though.
The offense.
Right.
You kind of have to agree. They were, you know, so close two consecutive years. They would have made it had the previous year's rules been in place. You know, if there's no Big Ten championship game, 2012 was it, 2011?
Yeah, 2011.
They'd be there, you know.
Right.
They're in the Rose Bowl.
Exactly.
You know, but things don't work out that way. Lose a tough one to Russell Wilson. That was probably the worst loss I've ever witnessed as just heartbreak.
Right.
It's a sad walk back to the hotel in Indianapolis. But,
yes.
You know, last year was pretty much a disaster, any way you look at it. The defense was great. Offense, awful. It was tough to stomach. It was tough to see a team that could move the ball, all of a sudden, just nothing.
And how many times
do
we say that, too?
I mean, disorganized.
So disorganized. And, you know, Mark D'Antonio had a funny quote today that he said, if you're giving the keys to the car, if you give the keys to the car to somebody, they've got to bring it back full. And that's what he was referring to with Andrew Maxwell right now. He's giving them the keys. If he's, I don't know. Last season he was bringing it empty, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
So you gotta produce. You gotta produce, and it's gonna be interesting to see how that plays out. So, all right. Well, let's dive into our current sports section of the show really fast. We're gonna hit a break and then finish it up. If you guys have any thoughts on the Mark D'Antonio decision to start Andrew Maxwell, we would love to take your call here at the Current Sports Studio. 517-355-9527. Do you think D'Antonio made the right move? And do you think that Andrew Maxwell will continue to be the starting quarterback throughout this upcoming season? We'd love to hear your thoughts again. That's 517-355-9527. All right, we're the Tigers and A's, the Oakland Athletics. They rally behind Coco Crisp and Derek Barton to defeat the Tigers 8-6 last night. However, Cabrera hit his 43rd homer, bolstering his pursuit of another triple crown. I tell you, he is something else. He just keeps on rolling. Do we have a count right now? How far back is he from Davis now? I know he was four yesterday. If we can check that, I want to get
Cabrera
that.
Cabrera hit one, and I don't think Davis hit one.
So he might be three back of him right
now. We'll check.
Have to double check that right now. He is unbelievable. But Barton had a tie-breaking RBI single in Oakland's two-run sixth inning. Crisp went 3-for-6 with a solo homer and is batting .500. He's 9-for-18 in his last four games. He's been unbelievable. I'm a fan of Coco Crisp. I like it. He's got a cool name. How cool is that name?
Oh, probably the coolest
name. That's the coolest name in sports, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Coco Crisp doesn't even have to do anything.
Right.
His name is Coco Crisp. That's awesome.
That's a hot name,
man. He's a fan favorite. Regardless of his play on the field.
Right.
For sure.
Exactly. Definitely. But the A's, they scored at least one run against each of Detroit's three relievers after Anibal Sanchez was forced out after throwing 112 pitches in five innings. Now, A's pitcher A.J. Griffin, who is 11-9 now, he earned his first win since July 29th despite allowing four runs and seven hits in five-plus innings. The right-hander was 0-for-2 with a 3.47 ERA in his previous four starts. A's closer Grant Balfour, he allowed an unearned run in the ninth but held on for his 33rd save. So you guys, you had a split, right,
Matt? I believe we did.
You guys all chose a split here. And
that's right.
Thank goodness right now. Who's down in those picks? I'm dodging bullets, guys, but I think
are tied.
We're tied.
Alex is about six behind.
I think Alex, you're gonna start. You might hear Alex's lovely voice next month. I
do have the highest voice compared to you two, so it is.
You are in a choir, so that's cheating.
Oh yeah,
of course.
That's like we have to do something else because you might just go R. Kelly and have this beautiful voice. We can't have that. Yeah, this is supposed to be humiliating.
I'd have to have you sing some R. Kelly.
Yeah,
that sounds like a good idea.
Sounds like a good idea, right? All right, so yeah, the Tigers. Jim Leland after the game. Here's Jim Leland's thoughts.
We just didn't pitch good. I mean, that summed it up. We just didn't pitch good tonight. They swung the bats very well, and we just didn't pitch good, and I don't really know what else to tell you. We just had uncharacteristically didn't have a very good game. We just didn't pitch good tonight, and we didn't, and plus we let them add on runs. So no big deal. We swung the bats good, and you know, our pitchers have been terrific, so we just didn't pitch good, and the combination of them swinging the bats really good. And I mean, Coco Crisp had an unbelievable game offensively, made a great catch. We got beat.
As you see, they didn't pitch good, so that's what it comes down to.
How'd they pitch?
Not good.
Oh, okay.
Not good. Not good at all. So, again, Tigers lose to the A's. I think they'll shake it off. I think they will. Like I said, I like that 2-2 split. I mean, Oakland's a great team right now, and they're fighting for the wild card, I believe, right? Well, they're still in that hunt for that first place, I know. So
out west, yeah.
Yeah, out west. So, yeah. All right. Andre Davis. This is a very, very sad story. Former Grand Rapids Christian football player Andre Davis. He has been declared brain dead after more than a day on life support. Now, the 20-year-old was shot at around 3:30 a.m. on Sunday when a vehicle pulled up beside the one he was riding in and opened fire. He was reported brain dead Monday afternoon, and that's according to Grand Rapids Police Lieutenant Patrick Merrill. Now, authorities believe the shooting was not random and stemmed from an earlier altercation at Latvian Hall where several shots were fired. Now, Davis was once a bruising running back at Grand Rapids Christian, unbelievable player. He intended to transfer to Western or Eastern Michigan University to continue his college football career. He previously played at college at the Canyons in California. His head coach, Don Fellows, former head coach at Grand Rapids Christian, said, quote, he was a great football player and a really good kid. He was the best running back in high school that I've ever coached. So our hearts and prayers here at Current Sports go out to the Davis family. You just hate hearing stuff like that, I tell you. That's just a sad story, a victim of a shooting. Again, that happened on 3:30 a.m. on Sunday when a vehicle just pulled up beside the one he was riding in and just opened fire. And he is now brain dead, former Grand Rapids Christian football player Andre Davis. All right, well, ladies and gents, we have to take a quick break and come right back at you. When we do, we will finish up our current sports section of the show and have we'll continue our MSU football discussion as well. So, again, we'll take your calls at any time throughout this show, 517-355-9527. Stick around. More current sports is coming right at you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next time on Here and Now, for kids whose fathers are in prison, they don't have a lot of chances to see them. But one summer camp is trying to change that.
A lot of times guys don't have anything left, and their kids come and save their lives and give them a reason to wake up in the morning and a reason to do the right thing.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now coming up at 2 p.m.
I'm WKAR's Mark Bayshore. 7 days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat. From government to the arts, sports to education, from business to travel, it's all got a home. It's Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 FM and at noon on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to Current Sports. As always, I'm your host, Al Martin. Welcome back to the show. We are still in our Current Sports section of the show. Thanks to Aaron Young. He's rocking it out all the time with some nice... Aaron has a very good taste in music, I tell you.
Absolutely.
Just looking at the music that he plays in the show. Applaud to Aaron. Give a hand clap to Aaron. Thank you, Aaron, for the
there
great
you go,
music
Aaron.
That you have. I really appreciate it, man. It's great stuff. Speaking of music, did you guys see Miley Cyrus at the VMAs? Oh, my goodness. That was...
I heard about it everywhere.
You still haven't seen it, Matt. Oh, my gosh. It's... Check it out, people. If you haven't seen the Miley Cyrus video, her and Robin Thicke, it was...
I feel like people are talking about her dancing,
yeah.
But I saw pictures. What was she doing with her face?
Her face?
She had her tongue stuck out in like such a
unattractive
way.
Yeah, that's
what
the Miley Cyrus.
What is that?
I have no idea. It's like her... It's
am
her,
I old?
It's her schwig, like, as they say. I don't know, man. That's it's her schwig, I guess.
It looks awful.
It's terrible.
Stop it, Miley. Yeah.
And you should... You know, it's crazy because during that performance... You should have seen the faces of Will Smith.
I did see that picture.
And, yeah, Will Smith and his son and his daughter. Oh, my goodness. They were like, what in the world are we watching right here? It's really disturbing stuff. All right, let's move on. The U.S. Open. U.S. Open tennis update for you, ladies and gents. The action is underway at Flushing Meadows in New York. And despite the rain, many familiar names are already advancing through the U.S. Open. Now, on the women's side, both Venus and Serena won their opening matches, as did fellow American Sloane Stephens. Now, Serena dominated Francesca Schiavone 6-0, 6-1. You know what? I caught a little bit of that match yesterday, and I tell you what, Serena dominated isn't a word. She just demolished. Like, just,
yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, it got so bad that Francesca, she actually, when she was about to serve. Did you see it? And the ball boy, I guess, had the balls and was about to hand it to her. She just said, come here, give me a hug. Like, she hugged the man because she was going through it. Like, it
she
was
needed
that bad.
It.
She needed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty funny gesture. And she's definitely a fan favorite, too. She's a really, really, you know, just down-to-earth player. But, man, Serena just looked – she had the eye of the tiger, and you couldn't do anything about it. Again, only one game won by Francesca Schiavone. So Serena, she moves on. Sister Venus, she topped Wimbledon semifinalist in 12th rank, Kristen Flipkins, 6-1 and 6-2. Now Stevens, on the other hand, barely escaped Mandy Minella advancing on a third set tiebreak. Now, with Maria Sharapova out with an injury, Serena Williams is the heavy favorite, joined by Victoria Azarenka, who has bested Serena twice this season. Now, for the men, Rafael Nadal bested American Ryan Harrison in straight sets, while Roger Federer, his match was delayed until Tuesday due to rain. Now, top-seeded Novak Djokovic will also begin to play today. Guys, we didn't do a pick of Mondays on this. Who you got in this whole U.S. Open thing right now, though?
Serena.
Definitely. That's she so looks easy. Great. An easy one. I mean, Sharapova's not playing. I mean, it's she can just walk in and just win the thing. So, going with Serena. What about on the men?
Serena. I don't know. Men's tough because there's not really a lopsided favorite here.
It's tough. Djokovic. You got Djokovic. I'm going to go with Djokovic, to be honest.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong with Novak. I mean, he's
unbelievable. I think I'll probably go with him, too.
Yeah. So, all right. And also in the tennis world, a year after Andy Roddick announced his retirement at the U.S. Open, fellow American James Blake has decided to hang up his racket at the end of the tournament. Now, the 33-year-old Blake has been battling injuries for the past few years, including a torn patellar tendon. He told ESPN a year ago that, quote, "Without my legs, I'm a below-average player. To be honest, I was worried that my knee wasn't coming around. I was going to give it this summer. I wasn't thinking that might be it." Now, while obviously said to, sad to be leaving the sport, Blake is content to end his 14-year career before it's too late. He says, quote, "I don't want to be dragged out of this game. I don't want someone telling me I need to leave. I want to leave on my own terms. I'm happy doing it that way right now." Many of Blake's contemporaries are sad to see him go, including Serena. Serena says, "Obviously, the U.S. Open was a special place for him. I understand how he would want to end it here. You know, I think he has a lot of great tennis in him, but he's decided that now is the time for him." So a lot of people out in the tennis world, including Serena Williams, expressing, their sadness that Blake is leaving the game. But again, you know, those injuries and that knee is definitely one of those things that plagued him. So, Blake, wish you well, brother. Wish you well. All right, Tim Tebow, he survived the New England Patriots, cut to 77 players on Monday. Now, the Patriots must make two more moves before Tuesday's league deadline to get to 75. The final 53-man roster will be announced Saturday, and Tebow has no idea of what will happen between now and then. Tebow says, "I'm just focused on the day." After the team went through his first practice since Thursday night's 40-9 preseason loss to the Lions, Tebow is trying for a roster spot as the number three quarterback. He didn't play in that game against the Lions, and there has been speculation he'll get plenty of playing time in Thursday night's preseason finale against the New York Giants. So I'll be looking forward to that. I'll be watching Tebow. Prior to Monday, though, there was also speculation that the left-hander could be gone in the first cuts. In other words, no one seems to know what's going to happen. It's really up in the air right now. Do you think Tebow's going to stick around, Matt? What do you think, man?
No.
Not at all.
I don't.
He's getting cut.
If there's a coach that would take him, it would be Bill Belichick. But if there's a coach that would cut him and, you know, not want to answer any questions about it and just do it nonchalantly, it would be Bill Belichick.
It's Bill Belichick.
I mean,
right.
You know, he's...
Do you
he's
think
on a
Tebow
level.
Is a? Do you think he has a future as a quarterback in this league? That's something that's debated every single day on ESPN's First Take. Why not talk about it right now?
Seriously, I don't. I think his time has come and gone. Right. Denver. He was very successful there, but you know they bring in Peyton Manning and their offense just starts humming. And you know when he was there, it was, you know, big plays, but in between that, it would be seven straight incompletions, and he's not accurate enough. All the faults that he had coming into the NFL, he still has.
Yeah, and, he definitely does.
I don't see it.
So everything that Skip Bayless has been preaching, he's a winner. He's a player. He's Tebow.
Everything that Skip Bayless has been preaching, you can throw in the garbage.
Just please throw. I'm not a fan of First Take anymore. I mean,
you were saying that.
Oh.
You still watch it, though. You do.
I can't watch it now. If I just happen to be at home sometime, I got a day off, I'll watch it. I will watch it.
That's a good question for the
listeners.
But
now I'm at work at 10. You know, it comes on at 10, you know.
Do you still watch First Take?
That is not – the show for me is just, I don't know. But, yeah, they debate it all the time. Do you think Tim Tebow has a future?
Anyways,
the QB position.
If he's fighting for a number three and it's rumored that there's two more cuts and he's even slated not even to make that, I think it's over, like Matt said. He had his stint. It's too inconsistent. I think it's done.
I think it's done, too. Tim Tebow is a guy who even though if you look at that season in the playoffs, he did win some games and, you know, impressed a lot of people. But, I mean, that was kind of his one shining moment, you know. And
right.
After that, he's really done nothing. I mean, you know, the reports out of camp is that, you know, he's not an accurate thrower. He's not a pure QB. Maybe at another position. Maybe he should try something else. I don't know what position that'll be, but something else.
And if he makes the Patriots, at least we will be spared the start Tebow chance because instead of Mark Sanchez, you have Tom Brady.
Right.
And that's Tom Brady's job for life, basically.
Oh, yeah.
So it'll be nice that even if he does make it, we won't have to hear about it, although I'm sure they're going to find a way to shoehorn him into every broadcast of anything that the Patriots have.
Anything. I mean, he's just one of those guys that the sports world just loves to talk about. Hey, including us right now. No. All right. Johnny Football. NCAA investigators spent a large chunk of Sunday with Johnny Manziel questioning the Texas A&M quarterback about allegations from memorabilia dealers that he accepted payments for autographs. Now, the governing body officials met with Manziel for nearly 6 hours. 6 hours, that's a long meeting, on the College Station campus. Now, earlier this month, ESPN reported that the NCAA was looking into whether Manziel was paid for signing autographs at several locations, including South Florida, around the BCS title game. Also, ESPN reported that a set of autograph dealers claimed that Manziel accepted payments to sign more than 4,000 items, including footballs and photographs, at an event in Connecticut in late January. Now, Manziel denied in the meeting that he ever took money for signing autographs, citing sources close to the player. Now, on Monday, Manziel was listed as the starter on Texas A&M's game notes, and athletic director Eric Hyman made a statement. He says, quote, "The focus of our coaches and student athletes is solely on preparing for Rice this Saturday, and in the best interest of Texas A&M and the 100-plus student athletes on the team, I have instructed Coach Sumlin and his staff and our student athletes to refrain from commenting on or answering questions regarding the status of our starting quarterback, Johnny Manziel." Now, attorney Jim Darnell, hired by the Manziel family, did not return calls on Monday night seeking comment. Now, in his first season, Manziel accounted for 5,116 total yards and 47 touchdowns, becoming the first freshman to win the Heisman. Now, Manziel led the Aggies in their first year in the SEC to a incredible 11-2 record that included an upset of eventual national champion Alabama and a Cotton Bowl victory against former Big 12 rival, Oklahoma. So, Johnny Manziel, you know, it's something, you know, very interesting because I was watching, a college football preview show over the weekend, you know, with Kirk Herbstreit and the gang, and one of them actually chose Johnny Manziel to win the Heisman again, which
wow.
I totally disagree with, but hey, what do you guys think? How do you think Johnny Manziel, do you guys think he took the money? Did he get paid for signing autographs? What do you guys think? I don't know.
Oh,
I think
gosh,
he did.
I have no idea.
I think he did. My gut's telling me I have no idea, but if it does come out and this whole thing really, you know, hits the fan and he does sit out, man, that'll be a huge blow for Texas A&M, I think.
It's bold.
Oh, yeah.
It's bold. And we don't want to give it away, but with current sports TV, you will hear from a very prominent Detroit figure who talks about this exact same topic briefly.
Yeah.
If it's right to morally take this money to sign autographs and such.
Yeah, you got to hear it again. Current Sports TV, September 12th, 10 p.m., the very, very first premiere episode. Greg Kelser was our guest, former hoop great here in Spartan Land, and also play-by-play or analyst, color analyst for the Detroit Pistons for Fox Sports Detroit. He had some pretty interesting comments on that, so definitely look forward to hearing that. But go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, so did he ultimately take it? I think absolutely. There's so many breadcrumbs here.
There are.
I don't think there's any way that he couldn't be charged with something, whether it's to the full degree of taking
exactly.
autographs.
Right, exactly. I agree.
There's some charge that is going to happen, personally.
Right.
But do I think it's wrong? Do I think it's right? I think absolutely it's fine. And I'm gonna go off in here and say, you know what? You see autographs signed all the time from pro athletes, and sure, it's college. It's a little different. There are NCAA rules. But is it that big of a deal? Do undercover signings happen all the time? Of course. These athletes sign for their friends all the time. Their friends and their brothers and their sisters. They all have autographs. So I don't think you can necessarily put the foot down. The same thing goes for HGH. Can you ultimately stop it? No. People are going to do it regardless.
Right. And you know, I definitely echo just about everything you said because I feel as though, now, there's to a certain extent, I don't think, again, and this goes back to our whole conversation about should athletes be paid, and college athletes should be paid, but there's limits, and I know I talked to you both about this. When you talk about profiting off a college football player's name, then I have a problem with that. I think the college athlete should be compensated in some way, way, shape, or form. As far as, you know, the average, Johnny Blow just sitting on the bench, third-string quarterback who's just playing and living in the dorm room, not even really playing, getting any no playing time at all.
Right.
That guy shouldn't be paid. There's limits to it. If you're profiting off of a someone's name for financial benefit for the university.
Well, now, hold on. So you're saying that different players on the same team should be paid different amounts
of
money.
Yes,
that
I am.
That is opening
that.
Up a huge,
I know it is,
can of worms.
Yes, it is. I'm saying it right
the
now.
The biggest can of
if
worms.
If someone's out there promoting Le'Veon Bell, or if Le'Veon Bell is on the cover of NCAA 25 or something like that,
mm-hmm.
he should get paid for that. That's his
okay.
brand. That's his name.
That's,
you know what I mean?
That's fine.
If there's a number 24 jersey, sitting, you know, I'm going back to Le'Veon when he played it here at Michigan State, or mm-hmm. 24 jersey sitting, you know, there, and people are buying it like hotcakes. You know what I mean? Like, everybody knows who number 24 is. Come on now.
Oh, yeah.
And if it's selling like hotcakes, I mean, he should get paid for that. I think
okay.
he should get paid for that. And
okay.
I know there may be some favoritism, you know, because, you know, not everyone's getting paid on the team. You know, that, like I said, that third string running back isn't getting paid.
That's tough.
But at the same time, if you're profiting off of someone's name, an individual's name, that individual should be paid.
I think if you do it on the different scales, though, then, like, everybody's going to go to Alabama.
Yeah, that's true.
That you know, because they'll offer you true. More money to play there. Then what is the point of college sports at all?
That's the problem you bring, though, man. It's like, if you...
I think it's got to be equal for everybody. If you're going to pay them at all,
you think
it better
be
the
for
same
everybody.
For everybody. Maybe...
I don't know.
Maybe
it's kind of like it's kind of like pro sports. I mean, Tom Brady's getting paid more because he's the best player on the team. He's
right,
getting marketed more.
But at the same time, it's like the Patriots took Tom Brady. Tom Brady didn't choose the Patriots,
see,
and
yeah,
I guess
I
in free agency he did. But you know, when you're just deciding where to go,
right?
It's like if Oregon's going to offer me $75,000 and Michigan State's going to offer me $40,000,
mm-hmm.
pretty tough to pass up Oregon, right there. I mean, it's just like. That's the kind of problems that are going to come up if you're just saying, well, let's all pay them, you know, whatever they're worth, so to speak.
That's how I see it. Yeah, that's how
okay.
I see it, man. If you're profiting off someone's name, that's that individual, I think they should be compensated in some way. To what extent, that's up for debate.
Okay.
But, you know, I just think that's wrong in a way. And I go back to that Fab Five story. I remember when I was watching that Fab Five documentary. And they're walking by.
But are they the best example? Because weren't they getting paid?
Yeah, they were getting paid.
I mean,
yeah, that's okay. Let's not say that.
I mean,
yeah, yeah. Take this ride with me, Matt.
Okay.
Go down the mindset. They weren't getting. We didn't know they were getting paid at the time.
Right.
But they were. They were definitely getting paid. They're not getting paid. They're walking by Foot Locker. They decide to go in Foot Locker, and they see these Fab Five. What is it? Reebok or Nike, whatever they are.
Right.
That's clearly Michigan's mantra. You know, and clearly profiting off of that whole mantra of the Fab Five essence. I see something wrong with that where Reebok, where Nike, whoever's promoting that brand is if especially if it's successful.
And Michigan, too.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like they weren't rolling in dough from that
right,
era.
Right, very, very true. And the players are getting nothing from it. I don't know.
I definitely see that is a problem, but at the same time, just saying – you know, let's pay them according to their skill level. I think that's where the problems start to come up.
Well, not skill level. Pay them according to their promotion and name. If you're out there promoting an athlete or promoting a jersey or something like that, that player should get some of that money. That individual should get it because it's their name.
Of course.
You know?
Right.
Skill level, I mean, if they decide to promote that third-string running back's jersey.
Yeah, I guess.
Because
you know they only pick, like, a few jerseys.
Right. And, you know, it's something interesting. Kurt Herbstreit, I think we talked about that on Current Sports, too. The NCAA website, and they got in trouble for this, too.
Yep.
I mean, the NCAA website, Kurt Herbstreit found this out that if you go to the NCAA website, they changed it now, obviously. But if you just type in, like, Johnny Manziel, the jersey and that number would pop up and you could buy it, you know,
right.
just typing in that name. So clearly there's some favoritism there. Clearly there's some, you know, that whole mantra that, you know, okay, here's the football player's name. He's the biggest in our game. Let's sell his jersey. Let's get some money off of this. You know what I mean? And Kurt Herbstreit saw that favoritism going on online on NCAA.com, which I think is totally wrong. I think that's totally wrong. And I think they should be compensated in some way. So now they've changed it, but
right.
I don't know.
Because they got caught.
Yeah. Exactly. Interesting stuff. All right, well, let's take another break. We got a few more topics to get to, and we'll also discuss a very interesting Top 5 Tuesday for you and talk about T-Mac's retirement. Where does he rank in the NBA greats of the game? So, stick around. More current sports is coming right ahead.
Late Night Week continues on the next Fresh Air. We'll feature an interview I recorded with Jay Leno in 1996, just before his fifth anniversary as the host of The Tonight Show. And we'll hear my interview with Conan O'Brien, recorded in 2003, when he was celebrating his 10th anniversary as the host of Late Night. Join us.
That's Fresh Air, coming up at 3 o'clock. All right, welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Let's get to two very interesting topics, probably the two most interesting topics of today. We reported a little bit of this yesterday. Lamar Odom is really going through a very interesting time, to say the least. Free agent for Lamar Odom is in a Los Angeles hotel where friends are trying to get him help for an unspecified drug problem. That was told to ESPN on Monday. Now, the information comes after Odom's agent said that his client had been missing for 72 hours after a dispute with his wife, Khloe Kardashian. Now, agent Jeff Schwartz would not reveal Odom's whereabouts, telling ESPN.com's Mark Stein earlier Monday that, quote, Lamar is not missing. His wife knows exactly where he is. Now, Kardashian, she reacted angrily on Twitter to ongoing speculation about her husband, saying, quote, really hard to sit here and listen to people talk blankety blank blank about my family. Without disclosing further specifics, Schwartz added that playing in the NBA is still very much a part of Lamar's plans. Now, Odom spent last season with the Los Angeles Clippers and has been pursued in free agency this summer by the Clippers and Los Angeles Lakers. And yesterday, TMZ was reported that that apparent drug problem is allegedly crack cocaine. Wow. Who saw that coming?
First of all, how does an NBA player like himself get into something like that?
I don't know, man. You know, when you talk about being in a big city like Los Angeles under the big lights, you're meeting all of these people, you're an NBA player, you're on reality TV, you meet different people, you get exposed to certain things, and unfortunately people go down a very harsh and dark world. And I think that's what's going on with Lamar Odom right now. It's very – I hope he's okay. I hope these are – like I said, these are just allegations. I hope that he's not really, addicted to crack, as what TMZ said. I really, because that's sad stuff, man. And I don't like seeing. And I think Lamar's a nice guy, but I tell you what, guys, athletes to me should just stay away from reality TV.
Absolutely, like, just people in general. I think right. That goes for the general population.
Yeah.
It's like, not
yeah,
worth it.
Very true. Exactly. Do they get paid from reality? That's what I always
they,
on my
they
mind.
They do.
They
but
do
it's
get paid.
Not, you know, it's not like the cast of Friends or something where they're right. rolling in like $1 million an episode. But it's they get paid. But, right. you know, is it worth just like wrecking your life? Like, has anyone in the 6 months after their show ended been like, yeah, that was worth it. I am so happy with my life and where I am right now. No.
No,
you
not
always
at all.
Hear... terrible stories. Things go horribly wrong. It's a recipe for disaster.
It is, man. Reality TV, I tell you. And you know what? Just looking at other incident, well, other athletes who have been on reality TV and gone down some pretty, you know, interesting stuff, to say the least. Chad Johnson.
Right.
With, the Basketball Wives. He was a regular one there. And then all of a sudden he headbutts his wife, goes to jail. He can't get back in the NFL now. And no one wants to give him a shot. I mean, and then if you look at Terrell Owens, even T.O., he had T.O.'s show, and then he's going through stuff right now. He can't even get in the NFL at all either. I mean, just stay away from it. I think it just brings just unwanted, unneeded attention as an athlete. And it's a big distraction.
Yeah, it's, it just seems like a shortcut to end your career.
Yeah, I know, right?
You know? Like, hey, you want to chop 5 years of earning potential off of your career?
Do reality TV.
Go ahead and film a reality TV show for 6 months.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's how just many people do you have to see have it ruin their lives, basically, before
right.
you're like, oh, yeah, I should probably not do this.
Exactly. You know, it's sad stuff, man. So, Odom, I'm sure more... we'll learn more about this as the days go by, but really hope that Odom is all right. All right, Larry Sanders. This is a pretty funny story. Larry Sanders, Ford, with Andrew Bogut's former team, Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Bucks. He recently attempted to have the word receive tattooed across his left hand and thumb. First of all, that's an odd place to have a tattoo. Your left hand and thumb. That's weird. Weird stuff. All right, anyway. But either he or his tattoo artist failed to consult a dictionary and mistakenly switched the I and middle E around in a classic and common spelling error. Now, and he was silly enough to post it on Twitter before before realizing it. Sanders isn't the first NBA player to botch a tattoo and then show the world. Former league scoring champion Kevin Durant completed an enormous tattoo on his back with a verse from the Bible, but the final few lines should have contained the word mature, which was spelled M-A-U-T-R-E. So, man, what is wrong with these NBA players?
It's French.
Definitely not French. That is terrible, man. Oh, my goodness.
Kevin Durant.
He went to college, too. Come on, KD.
Kevin Durant's like...
Kevin Durant.
He should have hired 5 spell checkers before. Like, if you're going to get something tattooed on your body...
Permanently on your body. Come on, man.
You need to quadruple check that before you say, all right, ink me up.
Ink me
up,
baby.
Because that is...
Come
on. It's for life.
It is for life. It definitely is for life.
What are you doing, guys?
What are you doing?
You're NBA players.
NBA players.
You can afford to have somebody be like, yeah, that's spelled wrong. Don't do that. Oh, my gosh.
You would think that, right? Oh, my. You know, receive is a very common error, though. Very,
oh, yeah. It's
very
that I before
that
E.
That I and the E. And I used to get that mixed up all the time back in kindergarten. All right. Well, let's get to it. We have a very interesting Top 5 Tuesday for you guys. We're going to list the who we think are our top 5 players of the Mark D'Antonio coaching era. Go ahead, Matt.
Oh, gosh. It's tough to whittle down because it has been a pretty awesome run, this Mark D'Antonio regime. Honorable mention has to go to Aaron Bates. I know you never think you're going to see a punter
Aaron
out
Bates,
there.
Huh? Okay.
But give me Little Giants and Mousetrap,
right.
Two of the most magical plays of that just awesome season.
For me in college, I mean, that Little Giants moment, I was on this is when I was interning. I was a sophomore in college. I was interning at the Big Ten Network Student U, and I got to, you know, hold the cord for ESPN that day, and I was on the field, and what a game to be on the field.
Incredible.
For. It was unbelievable. I lost my, you know, as if you're working for ESPN, you have on these ESPN vests. Well, any profession. I mean, if you're a reporter in general, I mean, there's no cheering in the press room.
Right.
I had on my ESPN vest, and when that moment happened, I threw down the court, ran on the field, and started going nuts. Yep, I had to catch myself, and I ran back to
Rightfully
ESPN.
Rightfully so.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
I mean, it's okay to get swept up in that. All right.
But Aaron Bates in your top 5. That's
just an honorable mention.
Okay.
Honorable mention.
Oh, this is honorable mention.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
Okay. Now, top 5. We'll start at number 5.
Right.
It's a tie. This is terrible. Top 7. Awful. But all right, let's move on.
Right.
Will Golston,
honorable mention.
Will Golston.
Yep.
You know, he was a you know, didn't reach his full potential here, but in terms of just the recruiting doors he opened up, 5-star recruit from Detroit, that was a big deal. You know, he was probably the first big time player that Mark D'Antonio got to come here.
Yep.
Tied with him, Jarrell Worthy on
Jarrell
the other
Worthy,
side of the
yeah.
spectrum.
Can't forget Jarrell.
2-star recruit came out of nowhere, was a dominant force in the middle. I think we lose a lot more games if we didn't have him back in those two back-to-back 11-win seasons.
Definitely.
Number 4, Max Bulla. You know, he's a coach on the field. You can say anything you want about it. The guy is a great football player.
He's great.
You know, just basically the perfect middle linebacker. Number 3, Javon Ringer. And I know he was a John L. Smith recruit and player for a while, but we do not beat Michigan that first year at Michigan without Javon Ringer going nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, he carried the team the whole season.
He did.
But those big games, again, he had a huge game against Notre Dame, and he had a huge game against Michigan.
Right.
That kind of turned the tide of that rivalry. Don't do it without him. Number 2, Le'Veon Bell.
Of course.
He's amazing. Yeah. You know, another two-star recruit that, you know, there's a pattern there with those recruits. Right. He came out of nowhere, just dominated. He 75-yard run in his first game, and it was
unbelievable. I mean, without Le'Veon Bell last season, they
oh my gosh,
they don't. I can't even imagine. Isn't that horrific? If you just think about that, they didn't have Le'Veon Bell last season. You thought that offense was horrific to watch last season?
Yeah, it'd be.
It would have been. I would
so
have been
ugly.
Puking watching an MSU game. I mean, come on.
So ugly. And then number one, is it any surprise? Kirk Cousins.
Right,
it's
of
gotta
course.
Be.
It's got to be Kirk Cousins. I mean,
best quarterback in MSU history. Tough to argue.
Yes,
tough
I
to argue.
Say it. Yes, I think so. I think so.
He's my number one, Captain Kirk.
I agree.
And here's where Mr. Argue Shark comes in.
Ah, here we go.
Number five.
I'm ready for it, baby.
Number five. Number five. More comical, Jay Dantbull Harris.
Oh my gosh!
Hold on, hold on, hold on.
Just because
you can't even count him. He's not a player.
That
of course he's a player.
That doesn't meet the criteria.
He didn't meet Michigan State, but he is a D'Antonio player.
He's not.
No.
By definition.
No. By definition, he was a recruit at one time.
Yeah, he was at one time. He was.
Right.
He never even. He never even hit the field.
He's still a player.
He never even put on an MSU jersey.
Did he enroll in classes?
The reason I put him in the top five is because we haven't seen a story like this in the last decade.
You're putting Dat Bull in the top five.
I don't think I've ever seen a story like that.
The team loves him. The team celebrates.
Alex,
great stat Alex,
did you just hear what you said? You're putting a recruit.
Like
in
I
the
said,
top
it's comical.
Five players.
Like I said, it's comical.
All right. It very.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, I put Keyshawn Martin just because.
Like it.
I like
just
that.
As a receiver, yeah. He was just pretty phenomenal. And hopefully, so far, won't be a bust as Charles Rogers once was. Mm-hmm. Number three, I also put Will Golson, like the recruiting impact. I'm not going to echo it like I have in the past accidentally. But just in following Will Golson, Lawrence Thomas coming in, another Detroiter, following you know another highly touted five-star recruit following him. Number two is where I put Kirk Cousins, and this is why.
Wow.
He may
I think
be
I know
the
who
best
your number one is now.
Le'Veon Bell.
Oh,
who
were you guys? You guys both left someone off. I thought you guys were both going to have one.
Well, maybe case. Is he on your list?
He's on my list.
All right, great. Well, we'll get to that in a
we'll
second.
That,
and here's why I put Cousins number two. Kirk Cousins debatably could have been the best MSU quarterback. But Le'Veon Bell was Heisman talk. He was Heisman talk.
He was.
He's also, debatably, the most up-and-coming professional running back as a rookie. So for those two reasons alone, I will put him number one. I am not undermining anything Kirk has done for Michigan State, but I'm simply saying that Le'Veon Bell's national hype was just a little better.
I can't argue with that. I mean, he had the most carries in the nation last season. I mean, he was unbelievable last season. Carried the team, literally. Last
but
season.
Hey, Dat Bull, let's go. Let's go.
Dat Bull Harris.
Dat Bull, let's go.
That's hilarious. How that rhymed. All right, number one, I have to put Kirk Cousins, of course. I'm going to go one through five.
Right.
Kirk Cousins is definitely up there, of course. We could talk on and on. I mean, he's a class act, too. I mean, I love the guy. But you know, you guys really surprised me. I thought Greg Jones would be on your list.
Oh.
Greg Jones, I mean, really,
wow.
I think one of the most decorated players of D'Antonio's tenure.
Jones,
he was a consensus first-team All-American in 2009 and 2010. The first Spartan to do that in consecutive seasons since Bubba Smith back in 1965 and 66. He was a four-year force, making an impact as a true freshman for D'Antonio's first team in 2007. He had 465 tackles, third in MSU history, 46 and a half of them for losses. Man, he was really good. So Greg Jones definitely makes my list. Javon Ringer, I really think Javon was he was definitely impressive, even though he only played two seasons under D'Antonio. That senior season was unbelievable.
Magical.
It was magical. Physically battering for him, too. I tell you, he took a lot of carries. He was a lot of aches and pains and sores after that season. But he definitely turned some heads, to say the least, for that team. BJ's on my list.
Yeah, that's who I thought you were saying. I can't believe you guys forgot him.
Yeah.
I loved watching that guy play football. He was awesome.
Wasn't he great?
BJ caught everything.
Him and Keyshawn were lethal.
they were a great team.
With Nickel as your blocking receiver. That was like the perfect trio of receivers.
It was. BJ Cunningham, I tell you, and that receiving core is taking a big hit without him now. Because, like you said, he caught everything.
Everything.
He had hands of glue, man. Now, you know, it really surprises me that teams have given him a shot, but I guess he hasn't impressed that many. I think he was down in Miami trying out for the Dolphins, and they let him go, I think, recently. I don't know.
He stopped in Philadelphia, too, I believe.
Did he? Okay.
But, yeah, it is surprising because he was
Yeah.
You know, he didn't have maybe the crazy measurables, but
right.
Dude was rock solid.
Yes, he was. He was really one of the best receivers, if not arguably the best wide receiver ever in MSU history. So, man, it's tough, man, to try to squeeze in the top five. I got Le'Veon Bell there, of course. Le'Veon Bell, who was unbelievable. I mean, you could argue that he's, you know, the greatest running back in MSU history. Man, I want to put Jarrell Worthy on there. You know, Jarrell was great. He was a mildly placed recruit coming out of Ohio, but he really turned out to be something special. He's now, I believe, in Green Bay, right?
Yep.
Doing his thing. And, you know, it's nice to see Spartans, you know, in the league having success.
They're all over,
man. And, you know, Jarrell was one of those guys. I don't think he's worked his way to the starting lineup yet. But he definitely got some high praises last season. So, yeah, that's my list, guys. I'm really shocked you guys didn't have Greg Jones. I thought for sure you guys had Greg Jones.
It's weird to think that they have had, you know, a stud at middle linebacker for, what, 8 years? D'Antonio's entire tenure, they've had great middle linebacker, whether it's Jones or Bulla.
Right.
And, you know, they've got more guys in the works coming up.
Would you put Bulla over Jones?
I guess.
Would you?
Just because, I don't know.
That's tough.
He's such a leader. It's more of the, you know, the leadership qualities. Not that Greg Jones wasn't, but, you know, it's not like you hear stories every single week about he's a quarterback on the field. He's a computer out there. He knows every play. He knows where everybody's supposed to be.
Right.
It's just like the extra mile
and his
stuff.
Leadership, too. I mean, exactly. Jones, too, but Max Bulla, I mean, he just such a he knows how to rally the troops, I tell you.
And, absolutely.
He's something special, man. That whole Bulla family is something special. But so we are going to get to Trace McGrady just really quick, just really briefly. Again, if you don't know, Trace McGrady has decided to leave the NBA, hang up the sneaks, call it quits, go out and possibly play for overseas. I've been here to talk to that. I didn't know that. But yeah, he's done with the NBA, though. Almost got a ring by sitting on the bench with the Spurs last season. Almost. It wasn't for a certain Ray Allen.
Maybe that's why.
Yeah.
You know, maybe. T-Mac's presence was just too much of a karmic imbalance, and they weren't going to win that title with him on the team.
They weren't. It's just like, come on now. We got Trace McGrady on our team. So, what do you think he ranks in MSU? I'm about to say MSU history. We've been talking about MSU so much.
Number one.
Yeah, I know, right? NBA history in your list of all-time greats. And you actually brought up the argument who's better between Trace McGrady and AI, Allen Iverson.
If I had to take one, I would probably take Allen Iverson.
You would take Allen
Iverson. Between
why?
The two?
Between the two.
Why?
Fearless. In one game, I feel like he has the potential to totally take over, whereas, McGrady, I don't know, you look at McGrady and the talent was obviously there, but it just didn't look like the desire was there. Allen Iverson is just, he was 110% all the time on the court, except maybe in practice.
I think the bigger
except in practice.
But in the game, if we're talking about the game.
The game, he goes out there and dies.
And here's the funny thing. Here's a better question. Who is better as a Piston, McGrady or Iverson?
I know, and they were both Pistons, right?
And they were both
as
horrible.
A Piston,
they were both horrible.
They were
Pistons.
Both bad. I would have to go with AI. Probably,
so he's a better player.
Probably.
Right?
Possibly,
right?
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Definitely makes sense. I would have to go, if I had to choose between the two, I have to go with Allen Iverson, too, just for the reason that, he was fearless.
Plus, culturally, he meant a lot more to the sport than
he
Jason
did.
McGrady.
I mean, he had my entire block just raving. Everyone had an Allen Iverson jersey. I still have I have two Allen Iverson jerseys at home right now, tucked away in my closet. So, all right, T-Mac, bid you adieu, brother. Before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Alex Shar, Matt Lucky, our production assistants, engineer Aaron Young, Peter Wolf, our station manager here at WKR. Thank you to you, everyone out there, all the Current Sports fans and listeners out there, for joining us. Same time, same place tomorrow. You can listen to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKR East Lansing and WKR FM HD3 East Lansing. Hey, take care. Have a great day and be easy, people.